Hey everyone, thanks for listening. Quick note on content here. There is a reference to suicide in this episode when we're talking about the character Barry catching the ladies' man plowing into his wife, and then he attempts to take his own life in a scene shortly after that. I hope you enjoy the episode. The movie is better than I just made it sound a minute ago. Thanks for listening.
One glance will seduce you. One touch will excite you. One word and you're his forever.
What happened?
He is Leon Phelps.
If you have a romantic query and you are under the age of 50, and you're not freaky or disgusting, please give us a call.
The ladies' man.
And the other thing, you know, and I'm sure you've seen the stories on this, is, you know, they redid the character design for Lola Bunny, right?
Yeah.
To make her less sexualized. And
I don't think that she was that thick. I think that the fan art was making her look way thick, like 4 C's, not 2.
I don't know, man, because they showed pictures of the two side by side, and I forgot how sexualized the first Lola Bunny was.
Well, I remember in, like, Tom and Jerry, when Tom would see some, like, beautiful woman cat, and she had boobs. They even did that in Ice Age. Remember when the, oh God, motorcycle. They even did that with Ice Age with Sid the Sloth, and there was a girl sloth, and she had titties.
Yeah. That whole, Ice Age is DreamWorks, I think, right?
Yes.
Or is it Illumination?
It's DreamWorks.
It's DreamWorks, yeah. The whole DreamWorks thing has very weird gender reinforcement kind of throughout all of its character design.
I mean, we watched Shark Tale. We covered
we
that.
Watched
Everyone
Shark
check
Tale,
out that episode.
The ultra fuckable fish voiced by Angelina Jolie.
When I caught a reflection of you and me, staring back at us while frozen on the screen. Crank the white noise and pretend that we're asleep. We're asleep. Dream, 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 dream.
Hey everyone, you're listening to Probably Should Have Known Better, celebrating comedy that has aged very poorly. My name is Tony Ginocchio. I am not a psychiatrist or a psychologist, but I have had sex before. And joining me, as always, your other host, let's go to the phones. Ooh, it's a lady named Nadia Vasquez.
Oh, hello. This is my sexy radio voice.
This is, we are back for the next installment of our Every Saturday Night Live film season, which started out great because we got to watch Wayne's World.
Yes, it wails, movie, as they say.
Movie that we loved, movie that kicked off an 8-year run of Saturday Night Live films because of its huge box office success. And for our next episode, for the one you're hearing right now, we are doing the movie that brought that 8-year run of Saturday Night Live films to a very abrupt end. And that is the year 2000, The Ladies' Man, directed by Reginald Hudlin, based on a character created by Tim Meadows, starring Tim Meadows, Will Ferrell, Karen Parsons, also known as Hillary from Fresh Prince, Tiffany Thiessen, also known as Kelly Kapowski from Saved by the Bell, and of course the great Billy Dee Williams. Nadia, I have so many thoughts.
I love this, Tony. I love this movie.
You love it?
I love it.
You love it?
It's so funny.
Okay.
I had never seen it. I had no expectation. I actually had very low expectations, to be honest with you. But so, it's fantastic.
So we're gonna have a lot to talk about today, I think.
I mean, it's not. Is it a movie that could be made now? No. Is it the best SNL movie? No. No. But was it funny and entertaining? Absolutely.
So I do think there are parts of this that work, and I think there is one gag in the movie that basically saves the whole thing.
Okay, I think I know what you're talking about.
And if you're thinking of the musical number, you're correct. Yes. But
way better than the one from The Mask.
Yeah, incredible. And we'll get to it, but there is a musical number that is simply incredible.
It's divine.
And I'm not saying that like sarcastically. I mean, legitimately.
I actually watched it twice because I love fantastic. It so much.
I have punched it up on YouTube multiple times since watching the movie.
I thought I would hate the movie, to be honest with you, but I don't. And you know, we also need to just say a big shout out to Maddie Portman, a listener that has been following the pod for a long time, a friend of ours personally, who suggested this in a Apple podcast review, which we appreciate when you leave a review. And he suggested this when we did season one. So this is a long time coming. Thank you for your patience, Maddie. We did it. I loved it.
Portman, who hosted an improv show that we both performed at back 9 years ago now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a long time.
Yeah. So we love you, Matt Portman. We finally did The Ladies' Man. So The Ladies' Man is a character named Leon, played by Tim Meadows, who is a radio host of a relationship advice show in Chicago, the greatest city in the world. And yeah. the premise of the sketch on Saturday Night Live, and Tim Meadows, I did not know this at the time, Tim Meadows was the longest tenured cast member of Saturday Night Live by the year 2000. That record's since been broken, but he had been on the show for basically 10 years and nobody else.
Can we please acknowledge that it
long.
Is the amazing Kenan Thompson who broke that record?
It is. Yes, it is Kenan Thompson who is now the longest serving. And so he basically takes calls from people, and Leon is kind of a very horny, dressed in kind of throwback 70s gear. He's got an afro, he's got a vest, he's burning incense. He talks about how he will have sex with any chick provided she is under 250 pounds. And generally gives bad but horny advice, usually focused on doing it in the butt. And
In the movie,
he loses his job after being told not to get any more FCC fines, and he just blows right past that. Loses his job. He and his producer, played by Karen Parsons, have to go pounding the pavement in Chicago looking for another radio gig. And Leon receives a letter from an ex-lover saying, "Hey, I'm rich now. We can be together and never worry about money again." But the woman didn't sign her name, so Leon has to go through all of his old sexual conquests to find out who she is. Meanwhile, an organization of men who have all been cucked by Leon at various points in their lives, who call themselves the Victims of the Smiling Ass, who are headed by Will Ferrell, whose performance, I'm going to say, as usual, zero notes. Just
hit it out of
perfect.
The park.
Perfect. Nails it.
genuine, bona fide movie star.
Hot on his tail. These men to basically kill him for luring their wives away. So there's that. I would say everything I've described probably can fill like 45 minutes of good movie. The movie's closer to 90 minutes. I'm gonna say there's some filler in here.
Yeah, definitely.
There are some legitimately funny lines. I'm not gonna say Tim Meadows is bad ever, because Tim Meadows is hilarious. Will Ferrell, like I said, is hilarious. It's just kind of a really thin character to build a movie around.
Yes.
And I think what's interesting is that, and we can talk about this later in the episode too, but Tim Meadows didn't have an original character for a long time on Saturday Night Live. And that was something that the show would call out and make fun of several times early in his tenure on the show. He had many memorable sketches. The best one was where he played O.J. Simpson doing the football commentary with the telestrator and spelling "I did it" on the screen. But But it took him a while to get an original character on the show. It took him a while to get a movie made with him in it. And that, you know, as we'll talk about later, that movie didn't lead to immediate success in film and television, although he found success later. And, you know, there's a few different reasons for that, I think. I think part of it is Saturday Night Live is a show that historically has not done a very good job hiring and retaining people of color in its cast.
Yeah.
And it doesn't surprise me that Lorne Michaels would kind of do a shitty job taking care of Tim Meadows. And so, you know, we'll talk about it more. But like I said, there's some stuff in this movie that works. There's some stuff I feel that doesn't. It absolutely could not be made today.
No. But the stuff that that does work works very well, which yes. In the future movies that we will watch, which I have already watched, I wish that those were as good as this one.
Well, I'm surprised you liked it as much as you did, but I'm eager to hear your thoughts. But before we get into that, I am even more eager to hear what SNL was like in the year 2000.
Oh, this is where tiny young Nadia started watching SNL around this time. So this brought back a whole lot of fun memories. But in the year 2000, it was SNL season 26, if you can believe it. We forget that this fucking show has been on for so long, but at this
almost
point,
50 years, almost 50 years.
Yeah. So this is the 26th season. The repertory players were Jimmy Fallon, who, did Weekend Update with Tina Fey, who was the head writer at the time. And, we also had Will Ferrell, Anna Gasteyer, Daryl Hammond, Chris Kattan, Tracy Morgan, Chris Parnell, Horatio Sanz, and Molly Shannon's last season. Listen to the featured players, though. Rachel Dratch, Maya Rudolph, and I don't know, Jerry Minor. Sorry, guy. Don't know who you are. So this was a really stacked cast.
Good cast. Good cast, yes.
Yeah, so before the start of this season, Tim Meadows, Sherry O'Terry, and Colin Quinn left the show. So season 25 was Tim Meadows' last season, but obviously the movie takes a while to shoot and edit, so this is the year we get the ladies' man. Chris Parnell was also fired at the end of this season, season 26, but he was brought back, which I think would have changed the trajectory of history and time because of his involvement in Lazy Sunday.
Yes. Yes, that's true. Well, yeah. not only the trajectory of Saturday Night Live, but the trajectory of literally sharing videos on the internet.
Yeah, absolutely.
Lazy Sunday came out on like the third day that YouTube was a website.
Yeah. I can't believe, well, Lorne obviously made a mistake and he acknowledged the mistake in all of the trades and was like, this was a mistake to fire him. So he's back. So then it led to, of course, Chris Parnell. We'll get to this probably in the section of good for them, but he was, you know, on 30 Rock and on everything.
An iconic character on 30 Rock.
Dr. Spichemin.
Dr. Spichemin. great voice acting work on Archer well as Cyril Figgis.
And I can't believe that he almost got kicked off the freaking show. So, but this was also the first time in 10 years that John Goodman did not host Saturday Night Live.
Oh, wow.
He was like a Steve Martin or an Alec Baldwin, because, you know, those two guys always do it. But then he kind of stopped. But that year, like I said, what is going on SNL is what is going on in pop culture. We could arguably say what's going on SNL now is just showing that our pop culture is really fucked right now. But back then, in the year 2000, the hosts included Kate Hudson, Dana Carvey came back, Charlize Theron was there looking hot and beautiful, Tom Green was there at the height of his career, Val Kilmer, Lucy Liu, Charlie Sheen was there. This was pre, you know,
Sheen. Like 8 years before that happened.
Yes, and then we had J-Lo, who was not only a host but a musical guest because she broke the record with The Wedding Planner and her Love Don't Cost a Thing album, going at number one on both charts on the same weekend. Insane. And then we also had Conan and Christopher Walken. Huge stacked hosting cast. The musical guests, you're going to lose it. Eminem, Mom's Spaghetti.
Mom's Spaghetti, baby.
Yeah.
And 2000, right? Yeah, so this, yeah. I mean, this is the height of Eminem's powers. This is Marshall Mathers LP era.
That's right. And there was also Radiohead, Mr. Ricky Martin himself when he was still closeted. Poor guy, but I'm so glad he's out and happy and has babies and a husband.
But the self-titled Ricky Martin, though, is a great album.
Incredible. One of the best dance albums ever. Great ballads on there. We also had Nelly Furtado, again, J-Lo. Shaggy was on there because it wasn't him. Aerosmith, Destiny's Child, and every white man's favorite band, Weezer. It was
okay,
a stacked... Okay,
well, let's be nice.
But it's true. It was a stacked musical lineup. So what a great year. The year 2000 fucking ruled in general. We survived Y2K. Everybody's really excited about comedy. This started the golden age of comedy, in my opinion. But then this movie came out.
But then this movie came out. No. well, that's interesting. You know, I think... You know, that's the height of Eminem's powers, but actually the low point of Weezer's powers was 2000. Yeah.
Was that the which album was that?
2000 might have been.
It was Island in the Sun.
It was either Green or it was the one right after Green.
Yeah. Nobody cares about those.
Okay, so that is very stacked.
Super stacked.
I didn't know Tim Meadows was off the show when this movie came out.
Which I think is at a huge detriment. Because
I would agree.
They should have brought him back at least maybe during Dana Carvey's.
They should have had him host.
Yeah. But, yeah. I'm not saying Lorne is racist.
I'm saying that.
Because I don't want to say that.
I'm saying that. This is not satire, not sarcastic. Lorne Michaels is racist.
God, we're never going to get a job on that show now.
Oh, it's fine. No, Nadia doesn't think that. That's just me, Lauren. That's just me. Nadia loves you. Anyways.
I fear him. You're not allowed to look him in the eye when you're an intern.
It's the Michael Scott thing. He wants people to be afraid of how much they love him.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I didn't have any interactions with Lauren when I was an intern, but I did walk by him once, and I did not make eye contact because that was what I was instructed to do.
Who was the head writer when you were there? Was it Seth Meyers?
Yes, it was.
Okay. Is he a cool guy?
Seth Meyers is a very cool guy.
Okay, cool. I think he's one of the better late night hosts. So Seth Meyers, Lauren, you can hire Nadia. Seth Meyers, if I can do the job from Chicago, I'll send you jokes for closer look and stuff.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Colin Jost is the head writer now, so I don't really know. The judgment is kind of murky at this point of the. Anyway,
we don't need to get into it. I'm excited.
We're never
for
getting
Colin
jobs
Jost,
on this show.
Colin Jost to fucking host late night 10 years from now. Jesus Christ, it's gonna suck ass.
It's gonna be so heady and awful.
It's gonna be so bad, and Scarlett Johansson's just gonna watch it at home and jerk off furiously. Anyways,
why do you always have her jerking off furiously?
I assume that's what she does whenever her husband's on TV.
I want a love like that. I want what they have. Anyway.
Okay, here's my question about the movie.
Okay.
As we get into the details. Do we think... I have some issues with Leon as a character.
Like, yeah.
I don't think they wrote him out enough, basically.
No. No, I actually kind of expected him to be pretending to be a ladies' man, but then he actually couldn't perform up to, like, what he's talking himself up to be. You know, like, that's kind of what I thought the premise would be, like, the game. But the game is that he legitimately just fucks everybody.
Just fucks everyone.
Happy about it. And I think that there's no conflict there, really.
Yeah, there's that. And the other thing is, and there's a scene, you know, when he's sitting on, I'm going to call her Hillary because I'm blanking on the actress's name. When he's sitting on the bed with Hillary at her parents' house, and Hillary says to him, she realizes what a wonderful person you're capable of being. Like, she's, like, talking, she's, like, giving him a pep talk, and she's like, but you're such a kind, caring person. I'm like, this movie's gone on for, like, 70 minutes at this point, and I don't think we've established that he's, like, caring.
Because it's not the it's not about him, it's about her character, which is that she is blinded by being like the manic pixie dream girl kind of situation. You know, like she's not a fully fleshed out woman
no.
either.
No, the most fleshed out character is obviously Will Ferrell's
obviously.
Character.
Obviously. He was given so much to work with.
They wrote, like, a full D&D character sheet for Will Ferrell's character.
They rolled such high 20s on his character sheet.
They rolled very high on him. They did not think through Leon.
No, Leon got the low rolls, man. Super sad. No, but I understand what you're saying, and I think that is the main issue with the movie as a whole. I think the jokes are really tight. I think the characters are really funny and they're used very specifically and everybody has a little role. But when it comes to the leads, you gotta have a little bit of something there. And for her to be in love with someone so awful and we don't get to see him be nice, even to her,
makes no sense to me.
That doesn't make any sense. But that is just because SNL people really don't really know how to write women, unless the women character or the female performers write themselves.
Right. Yep. Well, I think that's and let me be clear, if my choice is this movie exactly as it is or a movie that's 2 hours plus and we establish his character better, I'm taking the 90-minute movie.
Oh, yeah. No, I like a tight 90. I've been watching the Harry Potter movies recently, and I'm like, these movies are long.
They're long. And like I said, there's some stuff in here that doesn't work. There are some scenes I would have cut or redone. But there are gags that work. And so the openings, you know, we open on Chicago. The greatest city in the world,
we know.
and he's doing his show and he's doing like kind of the classic ladies man bits where a woman calls in on the phone and he goes, "Ooh, it's a lady." And like, he's given kind of the classic one-liners, like, when you're really truly in love, you will feel it deep down in your pants. Chlamydia is a soup.
I love that line. So funny. He's like a warm whatever. Chlamydia is a soup. I do the way that they introduce it is him getting his like studio all like tricked out, getting romantic. They've got candles and incense burning. They have like they move like a rolly chair away, and it's a chair shaped like a hand.
Yes,
I love that.
And the outgoing radio show is like a finance report. Yes. So it's like a stuffy guy in a normal radio studio, and they're like starting to light incense around him as the show changes over.
I love the opening dialogue. It really gives us an idea of who he is, and then it kind of stops like giving us more about who he is. But the first line about himself that he says is he's like, "I know ladies from the lowliest bus station skank to the classiest, most sophisticated, educated, debutante high society bus station skank."
Yeah.
I just thought that was so funny.
And the other thing that I think really works is the narration by Billy Dee Williams.
Yes, that's Lando from Star Wars,
yes,
right?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's Lando
from
Star Wars.
Yeah, what up, Timmy? I knew what I was talking about. but there was the other line that really got me is it establishes just the way he talks. And I think that is like the golden goose of the movie is just the way that Leon talks. Because he's like, if you have a romantic query and you are under the age of 50 and you're not freaky or disgusting, please give us a call.
Like, you want to get two thumbs up in there like the Fonz.
Yeah. So I think that like not everybody could pull off that type of dialogue, but Tim Meadows is so smart. Mm. And so he's got such a finesse with language. I don't think anybody else could pull this off.
No, I could listen to Meadows riff all day.
Yeah,
absolutely.
But you know that he didn't riff this. Like this is like dialogue written to the paint by numbers comedy, and he nailed it. And I was just like, I had no idea that this movie was going to be good.
Yeah,
because of him, he's fantastic. I think he's just so underrated.
He is. And like I said, the narration really works, and we kind of get his backstory, which is like basically he was like raised at the Playboy Mansion, where he started to love fucking, it's such a stupid gag, but I'm a huge sucker for it. Is, you know, then we cut to Billy Dee Williams directly addressing the camera as he's tending a bar. He's like, "And that's the story of the ladies' man." And then you hear Leon say, "Hey, why do you keep telling that story every time I walk into the bar?"
I love it. And they bring it back. They called that back a lot. I really love that gag. I think it's funny that his origin story is that he was raised by Hugh Hefner, but he fucked Hugh Hefner's girlfriend.
Yes.
And then got kicked out. I think that's fantastic. It's very, that's just good. I just think it's good.
and I wrote down a couple other lines he's saying. So we're establishing his character and, like, the bar he hangs out in with his producer after the show and his friends at the bar. He's got some gems here. I am like the Mother Teresa, but of boning. And then we get the backstory on how he met his producer, who I'm going to keep calling Hillary, I guess.
Her name is Julie.
Julie. Okay.
Show some respect because she got nothing from this movie.
But what Julie's backstory, Nadia? How did they meet?
Super sad. She got left. She got dumped at the altar by her fiance, and she barged into the bar and cried, and then he went up to her and said, "Excuse me, was your father a meat burglar? Here's why I ask. Because it looks like somebody stole two fine hams and shoved them down the back of your dress."
Okay, and now, like, hearing it again, that is a great line. You're right.
I love his delivery of, "Here's why I ask."
Here's why I ask. Yeah, that's what ties it together. You're right.
It's just, but I mean, I'm just saying the opening sequence is good. Doesn't mean the movie continues to be great.
Yeah, and so kind of one of the inciting incidents here is he meets another, that was a flashback, he meets another woman at the bar.
Right.
He says, his sweet line, which, his sweet words, which are, "I'd like to take a bite out of your butt."
But he also offers to buy them a fish sandwich.
Yes.
But for no reason.
And he likes to show women his dick in the bar, which glows and appears to the Alleluia chorus.
Yeah. So the difference between Julie and every other woman is that when he does his lines, she laughs. She actually thinks he's funny, but the other women cream their pants.
She's in tune to his shit.
Right. Yeah, but the other women are just like, "I definitely will fuck you after I eat this fish sandwich."
Like 100% success rate. And
except for Julie, so I would say 99.9%.
Yeah, so there, and as he's trying to pick up this woman at the bar, he does have a great line when she's like, "Do you want to take my car?" And he's like, "My car doesn't exist."
It's so good. He's just so good. I just to throw in an intern story, because I have an intern story about Tim Meadows. So when I was an intern, I was a post-production intern, and my job was to press record whenever they would rehearse a scene. And then the scene I would upload to the server, and then the writers could watch the rehearsal and see what jokes work and what didn't work. So I was there for the Betty White episode where all of the female what are they called? Actors? They come back. So it's like Amy Poehler, Maya Rudolph, all those girls, they were there. And Tim Meadows showed up because he had like a small part in one of the sketches, and he sat in the green, there's like a green room area. There's like the director, what is it called? What is it called where there's like the director and you see all the screens?
Yeah. It's the place where the guy sits in Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip. I know what you're talking
about. Whatever that's fucking called, because I forgot. And I sat in the very back.
It's not control room, is it? That's like what
they have. It is. It's the control. Okay, so let me start again.
We're coming to this with a really informed perspective, folks.
I haven't been there in so long. So I was sitting at the back of the control room and behind this plexiglass, and because that's where they like make copies of the scripts and stuff. It was like the most amazing energy. And then he showed up and was like, "Hey, how you doing?" And I was like, "I'm doing good." Because I was like, "It's Tim Meadows." And he had an actual conversation with me about my major, about like what I was interested in. And I told him that I was interested in doing comedy. And he was like, "I look forward to seeing you on the cast." And it was
what,
like,
a nice thing to say.
Super fucking nice person. Genuine. Him and Will Forte were like my favorite people that I met there. But his he gave me a hug at the end of our conversation, which I thought was really nice. So like but I forgot about it. Because it's like, life goes on. You forget about these kinds of things. So then when Tim Meadows is standing next to this woman in the bar, I was like, I remember that he smells good. So I was like, oh my God, this girl. I had like a flash of the smell. It was great. I had a sense memory flashback. But I think he's so incredibly talented, but also very nice. So as much as this movie like isn't super great, and I think he deserves better, he just genuinely as a person, what a cool guy.
So he's fucking this man's wife in the next scene, and And basically the husband walks in on them.
Who is this guy?
I've seen him in stuff before. At first I didn't get a good look at him, so I thought he was Dominic West, the guy who played McNulty in The Wire, and I'm like, that can't possibly be right. And it wasn't, but I've seen him in other comedy stuff, but I don't know his name. But he's basically, the husband is humiliated, right? Tim Meadows manages to escape. He slides down the clothesline out of the house butt-ass naked, mm-hmm. and the husband sees on Tim Meadows' ass a tattoo of a smiley face with the Have a Nice Day slogan under it.
So this is the point husband, where I think they should have made it so that Tim Meadows actually isn't that good of a lover. He'll fuck a bunch of people, but if he's not that great of a lover, I think there's more to go off of, but unfortunately he's good.
Yeah, he's good. So he gets away. Barry is the husband's name. His life is shattered. Just absolutely destroyed by the thought of some strange man plowing his wife, which I guess I kind of get. He tries to kill himself. He just doesn't know what to live for anymore.
Yeah, and there's a whole sequence about it. And, you know, one of my greatest fears as a person is for a ceiling fan that is on to fall on me.
Yes.
And we get to see that happen in this movie. It didn't help with my fear because he tries to hang himself on a ceiling fan.
What's crazy is this scene also depicts my biggest fear, which is someone mistakenly thinking I'm doing autoerotic asphyxiation.
Is that one of your biggest fears?
Because like they see me like at the wrong angle and through an accident of timing. Which is what happens in this scene. His wife walks in on him when he tries to hang himself, and but he like bumps the TV and a porno comes on and like his pants fall off, and it just it's a stretch. It's a stretch.
It's a stretch. And this is, you know, the beginning of the end of the movie. But I think we need a trigger warning for suicide for this one.
I'll throw that on from.
Yeah, great. But the thing is that he actually calls in to the ladies' man because he wants advice. He wants the ladies' man to help him figure out what to do with himself after.
And he doesn't know it's the same guy.
He doesn't know. And so the ladies' man is just like, get over it. And that's not the advice that he wants to hear. And so that kind of interaction between the two is over. And I think that might be part of the reason why it's not super strong.
Yeah. Because
the ladies' man has no empathy.
Missed opportunity, I think. Yeah, missed opportunity. If he was, like, giving the guy advice, if he was giving men advice in general. But he's using the show to sleep with women. Primarily.
Yes, exactly. But, you know, they missed that opportunity, but they used a different one because they had Mr. Eugene Levy in it.
Yeah, so, look. Okay, let's figure out where this is in Eugene Levy's career. So this is the year 2000. American Pie's already out.
Right.
So he's, you know, mainstream movie star. This is the same year that Best in Show came out. So I know Eugene Levy is funny at this point in history.
Right.
But he just phones this one in.
Yeah, he does. So he plays the executive producer of the radio station, and he says that the FCC says if he gets one more fine, I get to fire him. And Julie is like, it's fine, we will, you know, I'll let him know. And so she goes and tells the ladies' man, but then he reads excerpt of a poem that he wrote.
He reads an original poem on the air, even though the FCC won't let him be.
And he intros it by saying, and I read. Which is so funny!
Yeah, he's good at, like, just those little asides. I love that.
It's so good. But, so, and it's this beautiful poem, Tony. It's romantic. And it's
is sweet. Not love not unlike the unlikely not it is unlikened to?
It's beautiful. We get a little montage of couples listening in. By the way, this show is on from midnight to 3 a.m. There's a lot of people awake, and they're in love. And they're
Chicago, also known as the city that never sleeps.
So everyone's like in love and cuddling, listening to Leon give his beautiful advice on love. But unfortunately, the last line is about doing it in the butt.
Whip out everything you got and do it in the butt.
Everyone turns off their radio. Everybody's pissed. Eugene Levy gets to fire him.
Yeah. So he gets fired. He goes to his houseboat.
You mean the skanctuary?
The skanctuary with Julie, who's never seen it. And it's just like all just like 70s era fuck pad. Just all sorts of weird lube and lotions and a remote shaped like boob and and a waterbed on a houseboat.
And then she asks him where he gets all that stuff. Yes. He's like, I get it from Kmart and Walmart.
Yeah, mostly Kmart and Walmart. Like, that line was funny.
It's so good. The other thing that I think is interesting that they never really explain is why he dresses and has his apartment or his boat that it like set in the 70s.
Yeah.
But everyone else is in the late 90s. In
the year 2000.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that one's weird. They don't explain that. Maybe could have used something there. Again, yeah. I'll take the 90 minute film.
Yeah. Of course.
We get a quick cutaway to Barry, who is searching for smiley ass tattoo on, and I forgot how long ago the year 2000 was. But on the world's oldest search engine.
It's just called Search Site.
Yeah.
It's not even like Google or Bing or anything. It's Search Site.
Search Site.
It's not even Ask Jeeves.
And so it's not Yahoo. And so he finds a group called the Victims of the Smiling Ass, located at 12430 Division Street, which is insanely far west of the city, by the way.
Oh, is it? Did you Google it or did you just know it?
No, Chicago's on a grid system. It's the greatest city in the world.
Yes, but the tagline for the VSA is, we will have our revenge. So Barry is into this.
Yes. And then we get really just some fun scenes here where Tim Meadows and Julie, Leon and Julie, go interviewing at other radio stations.
Yes, and guess who is the first head guy? Mr. Chris Parnell.
It's Chris Parnell, yes.
He had gotten fired, but now he's back.
And basically, like, he has a demo tape of his show, and no matter where they fast forward on the tape, it's him just saying the word doggy style.
Yeah, to do it doggy style.
That
was also another part that I thought was very funny.
And I see under interests you've written debut. Oh no, that's debut.
And maybe so, I am a like 12-year-old boy, but I just love this.
No,
I'm living.
I get it. Like, it. I like stupid jokes like this too. I like
okay,
it too.
Cool.
Sweet. And then
I think that's why we're friends.
Yes, they go to the Christian station where the owner is, of all people, Mark McKinney.
I forgot that his voice didn't sound like Glenn from Superstore.
Yes, Glenn from Superstore. And when he's playing Glenn, he's doing a voice. He has a normal voice.
Yeah, it threw me off. And I forgot that he also was in Spice World and had a normal voice.
Yeah, and so actually across all these SNL films, you do see cast members from Kids in the Hall, which is, of course, another Lorne Michaels show, right. But Canadian.
Yeah, exactly. But I found it very interesting that you haven't said that this radio station is real, because I'm assuming it's a Catholic radio station.
Well, so I was trying to figure... I'm glad you asked. So I was trying to figure out what each of the radio stations would have been. And I think Chris Parnell's radio station is WLIT 93.9. The light. But
is that like light rock, less talk kind of?
Yeah,
like?
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. Okay. It's like they were playing like Celine Dion in the Falling Into You era, you know, stuff like that.
And just like as an aside, I am kind of shaken that the radio stations are still playing the 80s, 90s, and today.
And today.
Because that's today. Like 21 years is today.
Today is 2000. This movie came out today.
Yeah.
So this station is like relevant radio or something. I think it's on AM. I don't know it for sure, but it's a Christian station, and basically Leon's first job is interviewing a nun.
And then his first question is, how long have you been nunning it up?
And I loved that.
That's so good.
And look, I'm going to be honest. I don't think this scene took very long to write.
No, it really wrote itself.
It really wrote itself because the nun just talks purely in innuendos. Just like,
but she doesn't know it.
She doesn't know it. I'm going to be doing a missionary position next. It's like, I'm going to Bangkok. And, like, I don't think that's funny, but seeing Leon sweating uncontrollably as he tries not to make a sex joke is actually hilarious.
It was really good, and then unfortunately he did. He was starting to tell a story about being with two women at the same time, and then the nun has a heart attack. And then they get fired, obviously.
Yeah. So they get fired from that, and so he gets to, basically he's been kicked out of every radio station in Chicago.
And his solution is, he's like, you know, I know exactly what to do. I'm going to go have sex, and it'll randomly work out.
I must go and have sex and wait for something to randomly happen.
Exactly.
And not only is that a funny line, but that is exactly what happens. He has sex. The mailman, who's another kid in the hall.
Yes, he was also the guy who removed Ross's kundis on Friends.
Yes.
He was Phoebe's herbal guy.
The mailman comes with a letter from an old lover saying, hey, I'm rich now. Come find me. We can live together. But she did not sign her name.
No, because he called her Sweet Thing, but unfortunately he calls everybody Sweet Thing.
Sweet Thing. So we begin Act Two. We begin Act Two.
And then, Barry, you know, the movie derails, but okay.
Yeah. Barry walks into the meeting of the victims of the Smiling Ass, and is intimidated by all the other men there. And it's like, oh, I think I must have the wrong room. And we hear Will Ferrell's voice. Oh, no, Barry. No, Barry, you've come to the right place. They, too, have had their lives shattered by the sight of that man's ass.
Yeah, so Will Ferrell.
Zero notes for Will Ferrell. Perfect. Nails it. He just, the level of gravitas he brings to this role is remarkable.
It's funny because he keeps it so grounded at the same time.
Yes.
And not a lot of people could pull that off. But ultimately, the goal of the VSA is to cut off the ladies' man's balls.
Find the ladies' man and cut his balls off.
Yes. And so they...
Will Ferrell, whose character, as is established, is an aspiring Greco-Roman wrestler.
Right.
Who is married but spends all his time wrestling with his best friend Brian and also wants to wrestle the ladies' man until he squirms and squeals like a little piglet.
And it's obvious that Will Ferrell's character is gay.
Extremely gay, yeah.
Super gay. But, you know, it's fine. So the other thing is that every single guy, they know the exact dates that the ladies' man was... was with their wives. They also all have his clothes because he always escapes naked.
Naked. That's why. That's how they saw his ass.
Exactly. So they don't know. Obviously, you know, his clothes are iconic. So if you see a guy walking around in like a 1970s like wide lapel shirt, you'd be like, that's the guy who fucked my wife. But they just have the shirts. They don't have like any other information to go off of. But Barry shakes out the clothes that the ladies' man left, and a lighter comes out. And so on the lighter, it says ladies' man. And they're like, ah, this is our first clue. They find out that he is the guy from the radio station. And then they go to the radio station.
Yeah, we'll get there in a minute.
Yes, exactly.
Meanwhile, Tim Meadows is going through his black book of former lovers.
Which is like a binder.
He is... Yeah, massive binder. There is a funny gag where he like goes to one of his old flames' apartments, and she yells at him and slams the door in his face, and then he looks through the black book, and then he just goes across the hall to the next apartment and knocks on the door.
It's so good.
Another good gag where he almost walks into a light post, and he's like, not going to walk into that light post, and takes a step to the side and falls down a manhole.
Yes, I love it. Then he goes to the some sort of stadium. I think
it's Comiskey Park, which is where the White Sox play.
Oh, okay. Since been
renamed U.S. Cellular Field, since been renamed and is now Guaranteed Rate Mortgage Field.
Ew, okay.
Yeah, it blows.
Yeah, and so he goes over the loudspeaker and says, if you are rich and I boned you, please meet me at the nacho cart. But if you are rich and I haven't boned you and you would like to be boned, please meet me at the nacho cart.
Okay, you know, I am coming around on this movie.
Yeah, I mean, there's just good stuff in there.
But the next scene is the one where I was like, we did not need this scene.
No, this was our movie is at,
we're like at 45 minutes here.
Yeah, yeah, they're like, we're at like 80 pages. We need to bulk this up a little more. So, Julie's ex-fiance is their last resort. He works at the last radio station that they haven't reached out to, and, she wants him to meet Leon, but Leon does not want to meet this guy because he hurt Julie, and Julie mm-hmm. is his pal. And then all of a sudden it turns into an eating contest, and then it lost me and I checked my phone.
Yeah, so what happens, there is a good, you know, when Leon and this fiance start arguing with each other, and the argument gets heated, and the fiance says, you don't want to mess with me, man, I'm wearing the nice suit, but I'm from the streets. Leon does get a great line in here where he says, well, I still live in the streets and occasionally wake up in the streets. But they basically get into some sort of pissing contest where they have to eat all the gross bar food, like the pickled pig's feet, and then eventually the pickled eggs and the spicy hog balls. And eventually...
Is this a Chicago thing, Tony, or is this just like specific to this movie? Because I don't know. I don't know about Chicago bar food.
Yeah, I don't think it's a specific Chicago thing. I know that, like, the pig's feet thing is, like, a soul food thing.
Right.
But eventually it works its way up is they trick the fiancé into eating a jar of what they call gristle lumps, which is pickled human shits. And that's, like, a 5 to 10 minute scene that I could have done without.
Yeah, yeah. That was where they kind of lost me. But the crux of it all is that he said there was no way that I was going to let that man disrespect my Julie twice. And that was when my ears perked up. And I thought, the ladies' man is really good at fucking, but he's not very good at love.
That's deep.
Thanks.
Do you remember the thing you tweeted that was like, if you think about it, every single man is just some guy.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, shit.
Yeah. It's just some guy. Like, Jay-Z? He's just some guy.
It's just some guy. Yeah. So that scene really kind of turned me off to the movie. And I'm like, God, if they're going to win me back, they better pull out the greatest scene in any Saturday Night Live film.
Well, guess what, pal?
They did it.
They did it because they did a Manly Men musical number.
So the victims of the smiling ass pull up to the radio station. Incredible monologue from Will Ferrell. This ladies' man took our manliness from us, but today we declare our supreme manliness. And then seamless, boom, perfectly executed, flawless jazz show tune.
Beautiful. They clearly got some professional dancers to do
incredible choreography.
Incredible. It was choreography, not just like, it was aerial shots of beautiful choreography on stairs. It was gorgeous. I watched it twice. I loved it.
It is legitimately a fantastic scene. It is, and the punchline of the refrain is, because tonight the night will kill the ladies, man. Like, it's just so...
It's so good. It's so good, and everybody is very committed.
So committed. Like, and I think, you know, I think Will Ferrell's commitment carries this film a lot. I think one of the weaknesses of the film is that even though Tim Meadows is committed to the character himself is not, like, a guy who commits to a lot of things. So it's hard to kind of sell that. But this scene, goddammit, this scene is worth watching the whole movie for.
Yeah, yeah, I completely agree. And then just, you know, in case you weren't delighted enough, we continue on Leon's quest to go to his old flames to see who is the rich lady. And he ends up in Julianne Moore's dressing room, where she plays a very creepy clown who wants to fuck him.
He used to fuck Julianne Moore, and she's a circus clown, and she's in full circus clown getup. And she's like, hey, let's fuck like we used to. Let's do it real dirty. And I am just confirming right now that she actually has won an Oscar. I'm pretty sure she did. I'm pretty sure she did for Kids Are All Right. Yes, she is. So Academy Award winner Julianne Moore.
playing Boopy the Clown.
Playing Boopy. Like, insane. Sorry, I have the exact line here. Let's do it like we used to. Real nasty. And then she honks her clown horn.
But this is where we finally see Leon kind of think about his actions and is like, no, I'm not really into this. And he leaves to find that, unfortunately, his houseboat has been torched. The VSA got to his apartment. They shot through the door. They made holes in his waterbed. Why he has a waterbed when he lives on a boat, we don't know. And they light his houseboat on fire, but because everything is doused in cologne and made of pleather, it lights up very quickly, and his whole entire house is gone.
So the VSA, after burning down the houseboat, goes to the bar, and they find him, basically.
Yeah, they out him because they were like, we assume he has a tiny little pecker. And he's like, no.
Yeah, Tim Meadows is hiding in the background in a tiny little pecker. He's like, tiny little pecker? Tim Meadows escapes from them on a CTA bus because, you know, we have a wonderful public transit system here in the city of Big Shoulders. And
why is it called the city of Big Shoulders?
It's from a poem by Carl Sandburg, I believe.
Oh, okay. The greatest city in the world.
Greatest city in the world. The Big Apple. He escapes. He escapes on a bus, a CTA bus, but they find his black book. So they start to kind of work through what he's doing.
Yeah.
Leon ends up crashing at Julie's place. Julie, however, is crashing with her parents.
Right. So... Right. But he gives them marital advice, which is super inappropriate. And then she takes him to her childhood bedroom, and she gives this whole speech about how great of a person he is, even though we haven't seen him be great person
at all. It has not been established. That's like my main complaint about the film.
Yeah. So she's like, you know, I guess maybe she thinks that he's got a great sense of humor and he's charming, but that doesn't make him a good person. So I don't know. Very poorly written female character here. And they start flirting and then they kiss.
What?
And it's tender.
Has what he's been looking for been in front of him the whole time?
Yes, Lando says that. Because he's narrating the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, but unfortunately, he sees the logo from the letter of his sweet thing that he's been searching for this whole time matches the logo of the security system on the windows of Julie's house. So he's like, oh, I know exactly who it is. It's DeLune. It's Honey DeLune.
Honey DeLune.
Which is played by Tiffany Amber Thiessen? Thiessen.
I don't know. She looks fantastic.
Wow. And so... Horny for Kelly Kapowski. Some things don't change.
So, no, I'm horny for the adult version of her. Jesus. Anyways, so we do get a cutaway to Tiffany Amber Thiessen in her giant rich person bath. And of course, she's Will Ferrell's wife.
Dun, like, dun, dun.
That's the reveal. And of course, so Leon, when he's like, oh, I pieced it together. So he's just kissed Julie on her face. And with his mouth, and he just breaks her heart right there. He's like, oh yeah, I'm gonna go with the super hot rich girl.
Because his unemployment problems are solved.
Yeah, so he runs off to her house, comes to her place. She's ready to go when he arrives there. By the way, she's dressed
in
lingerie.
Full lingerie. Yeah.
Yeah. Meanwhile, as they're starting to make out, Will Ferrell and the rest of the VSA arrives at his house, and we get my other favorite very SNL type gag, which is the kind of delayed, yep, soon as I unlock this door, the plot's going to move forward. So we're going to stretch out unlocking the door as long as possible.
Oh, I'm going to drop my keys. Let me but just as soon as I pick these up.
Reach down and grab these keys.
It's great, but we're starting to see that Leon isn't really into it. He's got like a hot lady. There's a table full of cash that they're about to take. And she's like, take me. And he's like, I don't really know if I can. I think I'm in love and not with you. I think it's Julie all along.
Yeah. So a little bit of a redemption arc for him.
Little tiny bit of redemption.
Tiny redemption arc. And, you know, we all know where this is going. The VSA breaks in and Will Ferrell challenges the ladies' man to a Greco-Roman wrestling contest.
Right, and he starts rubbing himself with oil. It has a little bit of lemon essential oil in it. He's really, like, into it. And Leon's like, I don't want any oil. And then they
start... What? Will Ferrell runs towards him to get him in a wrestling hold. And Leon just punches him in the gut, like, 8 times.
And it's over.
And I wrote... Getting oiled up is not funny, but Leon just punching him a bunch of times is very funny.
It is very funny. But unfortunately, this doesn't really do anything for the rest of the VSA guys, and they are ready to attack. But Leon is like, hold on a minute. Like, I get why you're angry, and I know that there's, like, not a lot of great things about me, and I'm learning about myself, but also I was providing things to your wives and your girlfriends and your moms and your sisters that you weren't providing for them. And they need to listen to their ladies and what they want. And the guys are like, yeah, I will do that. And then everybody's fine.
Everybody's just kind of cool with it. We're like, okay, we're at minute 89. We should probably start wrapping up.
But not with Barry, though. Barry's not ready to wrap it up.
Yeah, so he has a gun, right?
Yeah. Wait, was there like a Chekhov's gun moment during this movie?
I don't think so.
Maybe during the dance number?
He drops the gun and Will Ferrell grabs it and he does multiple goofy gun poses with it.
Oh, right.
That's all I have written down for this scene. I'm going to be honest, Nadia. I was kind of losing interest by this point in the movie.
That's fine. But ultimately, Barry understands that, you know, he was also at fault with whatever happened in his marriage. And he's like, okay, fine. And so the ladies' man is like, listen, you need to pay attention to your wife. You weren't listening to her. Your wife wanted you to like take her out to dinner. And also, Will Ferrell, you're gay. And he's like, yeah. and then that was the end of that. And he ends up with Julie. He gets a job.
Yeah, a new radio show.
But he actually has empathy for the callers this time, which the caller ends up being Hillary Clinton.
Hillary Clinton.
Which is interesting.
You just got to take care of your man, okay, Hillary? Tell Bill I said hello. And he has a baby who also has an afro. We end on a freeze frame of him giving a thumbs up, and I wrote, tremendous waste of time.
I don't think so.
Not necessarily in a bad way, but yeah. I would say it is worth... You got to see the musical number. Pull it up on YouTube. It's so fucking funny. I would say, you know, they didn't start with the best source material here.
They didn't. And I think Tim Meadows deserved better.
I agree. And I think everyone did a good job with what they had. I wish they had more. Because there's obviously some talent in this cast.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a very stacked cast. The writing was thin. But the jokes were fantastic. And very well executed. You can't say that about a lot of SNL movies.
So, the question that would naturally follow is, did Tim Meadows turn this into a successful film career? Which brings us back to our segment. Good for them. So, I'll start by saying this. In, like, 2012, I saw Tim Meadows do Ass Cat at UCB. Not as a monologist, as a performer.
So How was he?
Oh, he's great. He was hilarious. He was fucking hilarious. But if you're... on the back line at ASCAT 10 years after SNL, something went wrong.
Yeah. Well, can you let some of our listeners know who aren't comedy people and who haven't been to UCB what ASCAT is?
Yeah, so ASCAT is like the big Sunday night flagship show at UCB, and it's where kind of all of the biggest veterans and you know, that's where like the UCB founders will perform if they're in town to do shows. So someone like Besser or Amy Poehler will do ASCAT, and basically it's, you got a bunch of improvisers there, and then they have a special guest, some sort of celebrity guest, who does monologues off of audience suggestions, and then the improvisers do scenes off of those monologues.
What's the best monologist you have ever had?
Probably it might have been Steve-O.
Oh my god, I love Steve-O.
I saw Steve-O do monologues, and I saw Moby do monologues once.
Oh yikes. Oh wow. I would say my best one was John Hamm.
Oh, okay. I didn't see that. I saw Rich Summer.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was really in New York and it was the if you go and look up the Seth Meyers feature for the New York Times, I am in the picture where he has his leg up on a chair, and it's like Horatio Sanz and Amy Poehler, they're all like on their knees, like looking up at him, and yeah. I'm in the corner looking delighted.
Yeah. So if you're like a really big name in New York or LA improv, which is such a stupid phrase to say out loud.
So sad.
If you're a really big name in improv in one of those scenes, you'll be performing an ASCAT.
Yeah. It's a really big deal, legitimately.
And if you're studying improv, it's like your dream to someday, not even to be in ASCAT. Your dream is to be in the fucking Monday Night Herald shows. and maybe someday after that, you can be an ASCAT. The point is, if you're on ASCAT, SNL is a step above that. Like, don't do SNL and then go back to doing improv. So, you know, he was in the only SNL film with a black lead ever, from a show that traditionally has had trouble hiring and retaining people of color, like we said. He achieved something pretty important in his career in SNL, but things weren't exactly smooth with his transition out of SNL. Notably, one of his first roles after SNL was he was a supporting cast member of a sitcom called The Michael Richards Show, which was a follow-up sitcom to Seinfeld, where Richards played a private investigator. And basically, Richards kind of wanted the character to be really different from Kramer because he wanted to distance himself from that, understandably.
Right.
And NBC was like, nah, you're playing Kramer. That's what the people want. And I assume coming out of that, Richards was like, oh no, there's only one possible way I can make people remember me for something other than Kramer.
And then he went on a tirade screaming racial slurs, and that was the end of that.
Meadows has also starred in other SNL films. He was in Wayne's World 2. He is in future Probably Shoulda selections, It's Pat and Coneheads. He was in the SNL cast for the entire run of movies during the 90s.
He was also in Mean Girls, which is...
has a very memorable role in Mean Girls. The best movie that he was in is, of course, Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story.
Yes.
I
would argue that he's actually, I think the best one is Pop Star. Never Stop, Never Stopping.
Okay.
Don't Stop, Never Stopping?
Never Stop, Never Stopping.
Yeah, yeah.
He also had recurring roles on The Colbert Report, Late Night with Craig Ferguson, and Brooklyn Nine-Nine. And finally, just a couple years ago, almost two decades after The Ladies' Man, he got a starring role in his own sitcom on ABC called Schooled, which is a spinoff of The Goldbergs. So, Tim Meadows, I say, good for him. Schooled got canceled last year.
He was also in a show with that guy, Bo, from Superstore, where it was like half cartoon, half sitcom.
Oh, Pemberton is the guy who plays Bo. Is it Son of Zorn?
Yes, it was on Fox, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and that was a Seth Meyers show, too, I think.
It was, and then it got canceled also. Yeah. I think Tim Meadows deserves better.
He deserves better. Like, the man's obviously extremely talented, and honestly, you know, saw him improvise live on stage. He's really good at that, too.
Yeah, and he's also a nice, genuine person. I think Lauren did a disservice by not having him on SNL the season where he had his movie come out, unless, you know, it was on, you know, summer hiatus or whatever. but I at least have him on the first episode for something. I think possibly Lauren did him a disservice by not advertising more about it. It's a bummer because, like you said, it's the only SNL movie with a black lead, and it could have done so much better. It's not their worst SNL movie.
Absolutely not.
Believe me, there's plenty more to come.
There's other ones we know will be worse.
Yeah, so it's a really big bummer, in my humble opinion. But, I mean, what can we do? Hopefully he'll continue to be an incredible lead in many things in the future.
So do our friends at commonsensemedia.org have anything to say about the film?
Yeah, there was only one kid review and one parent review. Ultimately, it was about just the vulgar language and the vulgar jokes. Nobody really liked them because they don't have a sense of humor. I think the jokes are super strong for what they had.
We talked about this on the last episode, too. I think more things should be dumb and the stakes should be lower in comedy. And I think this movie, you know, while not perfectly executed, understands that.
Yeah, I love low stakes and low brow.
Yes.
I love it. It doesn't make you think. It just makes you laugh and it delights you with the musical number. I think overall, a great time in general. Would I watch it again? Probably not.
No, I don't think so. Now, you own this on DVD, don't you?
I do. I have a 3-DVD set that has The Night at the Roxbury, The Ladies' Man, and Superstar on one disc. So
something to look forward to.
I got a triple feature. Yeah. But I still ended up buying... I had to rent it because I realized I don't have a DVD player.
Well... I think on that note, my final thought is, you know, Wayne's World was great. This movie, I think, exceeded my expectations.
Yes.
So I think, you know, we've gotten two really good selections to start the season. And with that in mind...
Wait till next week, everybody.
Wait till next week. probably should have Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. See you then.
Bye. My everything.